This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, a fantasy author publishing under JMD Reed. My newest fantasy series is going strong. Readers have enjoyed Diamond Stained, and now Oban and Avina are back for their next story. They have survived the chaos of Cash, and are now venturing into the dark mysteries of the Ruby Ruin. Diamond Stained and Ruby Ruin are out on Amazon and free in Kindle Unlimited, and coming on May 19th is the third adventure in their fantasy epic. Will they solve the mystery of the Obsidian Mind? Today, I'm joined by Robert Cano. He is the author of the intriguingly titled book, The Dark Archer. It's a fantasy novel with a unique and fascinating protagonist that promises to be a great read. All right. How are you doing today, Robert?
I am doing well. How are you today, sir?
Behind on work as usual.
Story of our lives, right?
Yes, it is. There's always so much things you have to do when you're an indie author.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad we get to talk in person this time. Last time we did it through email. So this is a treat.
Yeah, I was looking forward to this.
Yeah. So I like to ask, fun questions. And in the print interview we did, you said that you thought your personality was both that of a bald eagle or a dolphin. I'm just curious. They're such different creatures. What's the connection between them?
I don't know that there is one, actually. I think as people, we're very... I usually use the term paradoxical, but in this case, random, just because I think that, there are so many different facets to me as a person, as an individual, and I think it's the same could be true of anybody, that, to pick just one thing that really encapsulates who we are is probably kind of difficult,
Yeah, I do know what you mean. I think at least I found that becoming an author makes you self-reflective as you think about how you would respond to different situations, and it I think it brings out different parts of my personality. You ever have that with your writing?
I do. As a matter of fact, it probably sounds a little funny, but I'll spend moments like acting out scenes as I'm writing, just so I know that I get everything right. And so in a way I take on the persona of these different characters, and it's, for me, it's a lot of fun.
I know what you talk about. Like I'll rehearse conversations with imaginary people in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's get started. So how much of your own life experience makes it into your characters?
Quite a bit, actually. I would say that there's probably more than I should, if that makes sense.
No.
But, I think it's a good thing, too, because what that does is it allows me to put a little bit of myself into a completely different setting. And I think in many ways we get to kind of, through that, we get to kind of live or envision or, maybe vicariously feel how things could have been had we made a different choice or, anything kind of remotely similar to that.
Yeah, the but for God, there go I or something. That's how it goes, right?
Right. I think it's important for us as authors to do that,
Yeah, I don't think you can write a realistic or a three-dimensional character if you can't, imagine that. Imagine yourself being in their place.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. The characters we create, they need to feel like they're real people. And so, and you and I, we write fantasy. So, that's one of those things where we have to kind of consider, take ourselves out of it, so to speak, and consider the different different avenues sort of that, it can make it pretty interesting.
Yeah. Do you, what do you read to prepare yourself to write in a fantasy setting? Do you do any research or?
I do a lot of research, but I don't do research in the classical sense.
Okay.
I do research of ancient mythology. I have studied ancient mythology since I can remember, And that, of course, goes hand in hand with ancient culture and stuff like that. And so in order to understand the mythology, you have to understand the culture. Yeah. And, you know, what I have found is that I am able to create very well-rounded individuals, very well-rounded cultures, very well-rounded mythologies that all have, even if in my world the mythologies are real, right? They all have a basis in something that could be, you know, kind of extra normal. And even like that, you know, characters are very responsive or reactive, I guess you would say, to the goings on around these developed mythologies.
Yeah. Yeah. That's our belief systems are very, very, they're like the most protected parts of our identity as humans. I mean, it doesn't have to be a religious belief, but it's some sort of belief system that you will fight really hard to defend if you get pushed into a corner.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. So you need to have good belief systems for your characters, and, you know, ones that they make sense and are like baked into the world.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I try to do that. I try to do that with all of my characters, you know, even if they don't agree, there are, it could be just personal philosophies, you know? Yeah.
So, what inspired you to write Bene, your main character in The Dark Archer?
It came about by accident, actually. But when I was writing The Suffering, I had already created Bene there. He was a human. He was a captain of the guard. He was assigned to protect the princess, and he does everything in his power to do that, right? And then we don't see him again outside of the beginning of The Suffering until the very end of The Suffering, where we get to see what happens to him, you know, what happened to him after he tried to save the princess, right? Okay. And so what was really interesting about it was in writing The Suffering, and I hadn't even considered the epilogue when I had first written the story, because you see Bene again in the epilogue. I actually had sent it out to a couple of beta readers, and they were like, hey, we want to know what happens to this captain. What happens to Bene? Like, you know, you guys, you really need to expand on that for us. Because he is such a huge part in the very beginning, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I kind of just put it on the back burner for a little bit, and I thought, and I was contemplating, and then I kind of got to the point where I was like, you know what? This is what happened to him. He was captured. He was tortured. He was you know, basically turned into something else. And what they ended up doing to him was kind of an in-betweenness. He was stuck in a bit of a purgatory between normal life and life without a soul. And the way they did that was they attached his soul to another person. And so he was basically he basically became a part of that other person. And so what ended up happening was they couldn't keep him like that, and they had to separate his soul from hers. And so he became a Wraith at that point. And and so that was kind of like, I wouldn't say that it was inspired so much as it was just the end result of the events taking place.
Okay. And then that led you to want to write what happened to this character after that, then.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is absolutely such a fascinating character. I mean, when I read the synopsis for Dark Archer, and I saw that you have your main character is, you know, a spirit, I was very interested in that.
Yeah.
I believe we talked about the challenges you faced when having to write a character like that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I tell people that he's a you have the two different modes of being, right? You have the corporeal and you have the ethereal. And he is a Wraith who is stuck in the corporeal realm. So he's still very, you know, tangible. You can still touch him and hug him and feel him and like all those things. and he can act very directly on the world. It's not like he's stuck in like a spirit world or anything like that. He's in the physical world. And in my fantasy world, a lot of darklings, I call them, which are wraiths, banshees, and different things like that, they all have they all can be either spiritual or corporeal. And so it's really interesting to see and to work with how to keep like these things straight.
right.
I have notes.
Yeah, that can be tricky. When you do fantasy and you do worlds that are so different from our worlds, you have to keep those little details in mind when you're writing simple scenes sometimes.
Very much.
Or
so.
You'll violate your own world.
Yeah.
So you mentioned when we did our last interview that Fjorn is your favorite character from The Dark Archer. So why would our listeners want to enjoy reading this character? Like, tell us a bit about him.
He is. I would say he's kind of the wise old warrior. He has been alive for over 200 years. All he had ever known was war. And one day he begins to realize that war and the actions that he has been taking on other races, specifically the Fae or the even the other human races and stuff that he's come across, there was no nobility in that. There was no good in his actions. And, you know, everything that he began or everything that he had believed up to that point began to turn on its head. And I see this a lot with military members, not all military members. I'm a vet myself, but with a lot of us, you know, we start to see the problems that are inherent in the decisions that we have to make or the actions we have to do. And these things that you know, it gets rough because we have to consider these different avenues of thought, and we have to consider these different ways of approaching problems and stuff like that. That, you know, when it gets to that kind of point where you start looking at things and you start seeing all these issues and all these problems, that really starts speaking to, you know, everything else that's going on. And that's a huge deal.
Yeah. So is there any other aspects that your military background has influenced your fantasy writing?
Probably like battles and kind of my fight scenes and stuff. I don't do like long drawn out sword fights. Like, you know, I know a lot of fantasy is built around these really awesome ideas of really cool battles between, you know, two awesome individuals. And I might incorporate that at some point, but, a lot of my battles are much more realistic. You know, somebody is going to have the upper hand and somebody's going to die really fast.
I used to do rapier fencing, and your battles lasted like seconds. Usually you'd trade a couple blows and then someone was dead.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, actually only the really novice fighters would actually have long battles. Yeah. Ironically.
Yeah, the better you are, the faster you can get the killing blow, you know. So
yeah, because you just, that's the point. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to mess around in a real fight, right? You want to just get it over with and, you know, move on to the next one, because you know, it's not a game when it's like your life on the line.
No, exactly. Yeah. You know, I was watching a movie the other day and I was laughing because I was like, that wouldn't happen.
Yeah, I think that all happens when we see something that's from our personal life that is not being depicted right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's great. But you also you also like to write poetry, right?
I do. Yeah, I've been writing poetry for about 20 years or so. I have well over 500 poems. Not all of them are good. I have no qualms in saying that, though, because I'm a firm believer in growth. Everybody's got to start somewhere. And so for me, when, you know, I actually started writing poetry in earnest and I started pushing myself, I found that writing in form, doesn't matter the form, but writing in form really caused me to have to think outside the box. Because, you know, a lot of people think that the freedom is found in free verse, right? Because that's kind of the point. And yet, I actually argue against that. And I say, it's too easy to get trapped into a box when you're just writing whatever you want to write. When you're actually focused on sticking to a form, right? Let's say it's something as simple as a Shakespearean sonnet, right? Right. Iambic pentameter, you have 14 lines, alternating quatrains of A, B, A, B, et cetera, et cetera. And then the final couplet of, you know, whatever. When you're looking at that, it's like, okay, well, that form is quite simple. And it is, but to actually get the meter right, to actually get the rhyming to sound where it's not forced or to sound like it actually functions right, to actually have a message within these small 14 lines, you really have to understand the English language and you really have to understand metaphor and you have to really be able to manipulate these things each separately and all together.
Yes, yes. Nothing gets our mind working more than a problem that needs to be solved.
Yes.
Yeah. That is cool. So do you think your poetry affects your prose? Like, are you more a lyrical writer because of your poetry, or does it have no effect at all on your prose?
Oh, it does. It definitely has an effect. A lot of my readers actually say that they stick around for the prose even more than the story. As much as they love the story, they actually love the prose more. And that's high praise for me. You know, I wouldn't say that my writing in my novels is lyrical in nature, but I do sometimes use really heavy metaphor, really purple prosy description. And I don't waste like a lot of time on it though. I do it in little points through the eyes of my characters.
As long as your purple prose isn't taking up an entire page paragraph, you know, that's fine.
Exactly. And
that's when it's bad.
That's when it's bad. Yes. I have always found purple prose to be very beautiful, you know, and there are some authors out there who are phenomenal at it. The only problem is when it's too much.
Yes. That is, it's like everything in writing. It's just execution.
You can do
anything if you can execute it properly.
Yep.
Figuring that out can be a challenge.
Yeah, definitely. But I like those challenges, you know. I mean, people say all the time, don't write in passive voice. Guess what I do sometimes? I write in passive voice, you know, and I'll do it on purpose.
Passive voice has a place.
Absolutely.
It can put your reader into the mind of like a character that's in a helpless situation. Because, you know, when they're being acted upon or if they're not sure what's going on, it's like anything, but you can't use it all the time, though. Other times you need to be direct with your verbs.
Absolutely. It's all about understanding it and then knowing where those lines are.
Yes. So you have very unique covers. How do you come about like getting your covers? Do you how involved are you in their creation with like your artists, or do you do them yourself?
I am 1,000% involved. I do not do them myself. I am not that good of a drawer. My artist, her name is Madeline Holvik, and she is absolutely phenomenal. She creates what I see in my head, basically. So like for the cover for The Dark Archer, I had in my head, obviously I can't necessarily just throw a scene of from my book into the cover and make it work all the time. And so what I wanted to do, and I told her about this, and I actually asked her to be a little creative with it, but I basically just told her, hey, look, I want Bene on the cover. I want him, I want the three moons, right? Because it'll give a sense of the world, right? And I want mountains, because there's a lot of mountains involved in the story. Uh-huh. And so she sent me first a few sketches of of like Bene himself, just to kind of try and get a feel of what his armor might look like or what his appearance might be, and phenomenal drawings all around. And then, you know, I told her, well, what if we went with something more like this versus that? And so we went back and forth a little bit. And in the end, we were able to create not only this really cool cover, but kind of a look for Bene himself. And then even though that's not on the cover or anything, but we have sketches of Faorin. We have sketches of Afractus, who is the elder dragon.
I like that name, Fractus. That's a good name.
Yeah. Afractus is dope. He and his sister Veneri are the elders, and they are very powerful. So, okay. Yeah. They're not like really main characters, but they're always in the background.
Okay. So what is next for you in your writing?
Next, I have The Shadow Cult coming. That's coming out later this year.
All right.
And it picks up about 3 months after The Dark Archer ends. And so in the epilogue, I set it all up. In the epilogue for The Dark Archer, I set it all up for what's coming. And basically, it's hell's coming. You know, it's things are getting nuts. And then I have already, so that's already done. That's already mostly edited. We're just waiting on beta testing and then line edits, and it's good to go. And then,
all right.
And then I've already started on The World Soul, which is the next one, and it will round out the trilogy that is specific to what started with Bene.
Okay, that sounds good. If you would like to tell our listeners where they can find you on social media or your website or anything like that.
Sure. You can find me. I think you can pretty much just Google me. I pop up pretty quick. You'll see The Suffering and The Dark Archer right there. Outside of that, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at shadowyembrace.com. My Twitter, I'm kind of sucky at it, but my Instagram, I'm always posting funny memes and updates as to what's going on in my writing world. We have a writer group, which you can find. It's called Beyond the Fall. And then you can follow me on my blog as well at shadowyembrace.com.
Okay, thank you. It was great talking with you, Robert.
Thank you, James. It was nice chatting with you, too.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com, and follow me on Twitter at jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, Fantastical Worlds of the Imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at fantasy-focus.com and wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.